You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with The New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
And now a three-car pileup on the social policy highway. Recovering drug addicts need places to live. Politicians need to say they are reducing their homeless populations. And landlords in poor neighborhoods need easy rent in the form of government housing vouchers. Such a collision has occurred in the city of New York and is likely to be happening around the country. Programs to provide subsidized housing for recovering drug addicts have been exploited by unscrupulous landlords and left to fester unregulated by politicians anxious to count people as coming out of homelessness, even if their living situation is little better than a city shelter. Kim Barker, investigative reporter for our partner, The New York Times, took a look at the so-called three-quarter homes program in New York City and found a revolving door of relapse and unsafe conditions that has led to an emergency task force to investigate the city's three-quarter houses.
What's been interesting for me in the last couple of days is hearing from people all over the country about, we have one of these across the street from us, we have one of these next door. Even like, I used to grow up in Billings, Montana, and the first cellist in the orchestra emailed me, and she's in California now, and she says, you know, we've got one of these across the street that became a huge problem. Philadelphia, LA, Chicago, I'm hearing from folks all over the country about it. The thing is that there's no record anywhere of where these places are or how many there are, and there's no regulations for them, and there's no rules of how they should be run.
And what distinguishes a three-quarter house from a halfway house or other options is that it's run a little bit like foster care in the sense that people get reimbursement for bringing people into their residence, and that there's a financial incentive to take people in, and then if the reimbursement goes away, there is a financial incentive to kick them out.
Well, what I would say the major difference is between a place like a three-quarter house and a regulated halfway house is the lack of regulations. Again, there is no rules for these homes. They are illegal by definition. You can't have this many people crowded into a place. But you're right in terms of the incentives here. A lot of the folks that run these homes get money not just from, you know, say the city paying public assistance. And in New York, that means $215 a month. 215. I mean, think about that. That amount has not gone up since 1988.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
When the median rent in New York was about $390, and now it's about $1,200 a month. So you've got a situation where nobody wants to take these folks in for $215 a month because a lot of them don't have jobs. A lot of them are mentally ill, have substance abuse issues, various problems just down on their luck. These are the only places that will take them in, but there is no regulation. So a lot of the landlords make more money through a kickback scheme, whether it's through Medicaid kickbacks from programs they send them to or through, you know, forcing them to go to certain doctors, you know, if they need a bed and they get kickbacks there. But as soon as that money dries up, as soon as they're done with a program, the landlords don't want them there anymore because they're not getting as much money through them. You know, I describe these guys as sort of being like human ATM machines of government money. And as soon as the ATM machine is empty, you know, they want somebody else in that bed, somebody else who can get more money for them.
There's one other incentive we should talk about, and that is the political incentive for the mayor's office, in this case of New York, and political leadership around the country to say that they're reducing the number of people in shelters.
Sure.
These people are homeless, but yet they're not homeless because they're not counted as being as part of the shelter population. How does that work?
You're absolutely right. I mean, you're only considered to be homeless or part of the homeless population if you're either counted in the census on the streets or if you're in the shelter system. And you saw the rise of three-quarter houses very much in New York during the administration of, you know, Michael Bloomberg, the mayor that we had, because he basically, you know, spearheaded a push to reduce the shelter rolls to get those much lower. And that caused the rise of these homes because where were these folks supposed to go? And also for a lot of them, they'd rather be in a situation like a three-quarter house, as horrible as it is, than be in a shelter, seen as much more dangerous and restrictive and also very temporary. What's interesting to me is it now costs $29,000 a year to keep a person in a shelter in New York. And you compare that with a $215 monthly shelter allowance. So it is cheaper for in some ways to do something about this problem than people necessarily think.
So landlords want free money and politicians want to be able to say that they're reducing homelessness. And right in the middle of all this is a recovering drug addict. This fellow's name is Daniel Puff.
I was incarcerated the first time at 14 years old. It's the life I've known for the past 25 years. My process shouldn't be as difficult as it is right now, but it is because I was placed into New Lots. And it's the truth.
New Lots is a neighborhood, but it's also the name of this particular three-quarter house. Describe it for us.
Well, it's not the official name. None of these have official names, but everybody just called this New Lots. It was six neighboring houses right next to each other between 690 New Lots Avenue and 700 New Lots Avenue. All of these houses looked identical, you know, all beige, two-story buildings, and each one of them had two apartments. And in each apartment was three tiny bedrooms. And in each of these apartments was 10 people squeezed into these three tiny bedrooms. So there's 120 people in all living in these six homes.
And we would call this a tenement if we were in the 1920s.
Right, right. A tenement, a slum, a flop house, any of those sort of things.
And from the counselor community, from the people who actually administer programs for addicts, the sad irony here, and here's Sadie Billinger, who's a counselor's assistant at VIP Community Services, part of the broader New York Times investigation into this, that even though someone wants to get help, they're unable to under this system.
For a person in recovery, such as Danny, 9 out of 10, he don't have anyone to go to stay with, because either they don't trust him or they want him to use with them. And he's trying to avoid that. Danny wants to stay clean.
What is the impact on drug addicts and recovering drug addicts of this program, do you think? Positive or net negative? Is it a reformable program or should it be tossed out?
I think even calling it a program is a false statement. It's not a program. I mean, the whole way the system or lack of system is set up is to put these folks through programs, cause them to relapse, and then they start the whole process again. It's about creating this system where everybody else is making money off of them, and it's designed not to get them into recovery, but to keep them, you know, stressed and distressed, as one of the people I wrote about talked about. It's not designed to get them into recovery.
And a relapse qualifies them once again for getting these services.
Inpatient, detox, and then they can come out and get these services again. And you talk a lot to these very reputable nonprofits and hospitals that deal with this population, and they're also stuck. There's no place to send these guys, you know, and most of them are men, although there are three-quarter houses for women as well. But there's no place, you know. It's like the choice between sending them to a shelter where nobody wants to go and sending them into a three-quarter house or seeing them on the street.
Kim Barker, investigative reporter for the New York Times Metro Desk. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.